You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Some scientists, including guests here on Radio EcoShock, have suggested we could plant enough trees to reduce the overburden of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. We like the idea. It's our friends, the trees. It's green geoengineering, perhaps. But as we'll hear in our second interview, German scientist Dr. Lena Boysen led a team that tested that idea out. Dr. Lena R. Boysen is from the Land and the Earth System at the Max Planck Institute for Meteorology in Hamburg, Germany. She is also associated with Humboldt University in Berlin and the Potsdam Institute. We reached her at a conference in Brussels. Lena Boysen, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much. Nice for having me.
Lena, are we getting more desperate? Is geoengineering a growing discussion among climate scientists?
I would say that it's definitely more and more popular topic among climate scientists, and there are more projects dealing with this topic, actually. But I wouldn't say if it's too desperate or not, but we need to know what the options are. And there are advocates for geoengineering, and we need to know if it could work at all and what the positive or negative feedbacks might be for us. Yeah, so it's investigated right now in different parts of the world. And I was part in a big project in Germany, a priority program on climate engineering. And yeah, we're looking at climate engineering really without having any pre-assumptions if it could work or not, or if it should work or not. We're just interested how the climate system and the Earth system might react to such proposals.
Well, before we get to your new science, we are going to talk about that. I want to step back to your 2016 paper that you co-authored with Dr. Vera Heck at the Potsdam Institute. And that paper asks, is extensive terrestrial carbon dioxide removal a green form of geoengineering? And what do you think? Is it?
So first of all, terrestrial climate engineering, what we mean by that is that we plant biomass plantations, so fast-growing trees or grasses that are harvested on a regular basis. And so it seems that this technique of extracting carbon from the atmosphere through plants is a very green technique, really. What my colleague investigated there is if it's really green in a way that biogeochemical processes on the planet are not affected in a negative way. And she found out that the effects on water fluxes, on nitrogen fluxes, carbon fluxes, they are of a similar magnitude as what we did before with agriculture during the last decade. However, it's in a different direction. So it would, again, not be the best option to go. So it's really not green. We would really push the Earth system into a new direction, biochemically spoken.
Okay, now you are the lead author in a paper just published May 2017 with the title The Limits to Global Warming Mitigation by Terrestrial Carbon Removal. On Radio EcoShock, Lena, we've had respected scientists and authors suggest humanity might save the climate if only we could plant enough trees. What is wrong with that idea?
So it's not wrong. So planting trees is a generally good idea. So if we reforest areas that have been cleared in the past, like the Amazon forest regions, that would be a great option. Or to stop deforestation would also be a great option. But we are talking not about the regular forest that you know from your region, but we're talking about highly managed biomass plantations. So their only purpose is to extract as much carbon out of the atmosphere as possible. So these are very fast-growing species like poplars or willows or switchgrass, elephant grass. They need to be harvested very regularly, and this is a great interference with the ecosystems. So first of all, you need the space to plant these trees and grasses. This could either be on natural landscapes So you have to clear that from ecosystems that are there right now, or you have to go for agricultural land that is maybe unproductive right now and could be transformed to biomass plantations. So it's really not about the common forest that we know. We would change the landscapes. We might need to irrigate those plantations to be really effective. We might need to have the machinery in place to cut down the trees and the grasses and to transport biomass, to utilize this biomass in the end, because it's not enough to just grow trees, harvest them, and regrow forests. So you really have to take the biomass from the plantations and capture the carbon stored in them so that it's really extracted from the system.
How do we capture that carbon? How do we grab that carbon after it's been harvested?
So, yeah, so the trees, grasses, they store carbon in their biomass, so leaves and stems, and this needs to be taken out of the system. So there are different options, basically. The most prominent one is carbon capture and storage. So the biomass is converted to an energy carrier, so like liquid fuel or biogas. And in that process, the carbon is captured and then stored away in geological reservoirs. So if this would work on a global scale, it would be a really great advantage because it's very efficient in storing away carbon. However, you would need these plants for that, and you need to have geological reservoirs for that. And right now, the technology is not in place yet globally, so that's a bit difficult. Another option would be to burn this biomass to produce biochar, and this biochar could be brought onto the fields, and this would actually or could reduce fertilizers used right now on cropland and pasture land. So this would actually be a good thing to bring out biochar on the fields. Another option would be to use it as building material, as we did like decades or centuries ago, to replace like cement by wood again, so building houses with wood, so that it's at least kept away from the carbon cycle for some decades or centuries even. Another option would be burial of trees, so you really have to dig holes and put the trees in there, cover it up again, so that it's also kept away from the carbon cycle, but this is on this scale very unrealistic.
Well, we had a Canadian scientist who was half-joking when he suggested that we may have to cut down the boreal forest and bury it and let it regrow. I can't see the public ever accepting such a wide-ranging plan.
So what he was aiming at is that young forests are much more productive than older forests. So they want to grow. They really take up the CO2 from the atmosphere, build up sugar molecules and store the carbon in them, and they want to grow. So that's why we need fast-growing trees, and they are cut down like between 5 to 10 years. And that time span, they are cut down again so that new forests can regrow. So that was what he was aiming at. And yes, so we would need large areas with biomass plantations to really have an effective climate engineering tool, in a sense that if we are at mid-century, if we are close to the 2-degree target and we see that there's a pressure to get down the global atmospheric CO2 concentration, then we would need large areas with biomass plantations. And yeah, that's not realistic, really.
So how do you know from this study that the green way of using more plants will not be enough to counteract the impacts of our fossil fuel burning?
So we use the biosphere model. So that model is very detailed in the representation of vegetation. So we have different crop types, and different natural plants like boreal trees or tropical trees, but we also have these bioenergy plantations in there. And the model has been compared to observations, to field studies already. So we have trust in our model. So it's still a model, but we think that we get the magnitudes right in our model. So it's not coupled to the atmosphere like the global climate model. So we miss some feedbacks with the atmosphere, that's true. However, we are much more detailed on the vegetation side. And so we really investigated if we have a certain climate with a certain CO2 concentration, in the 21st century, how would the biosphere react and how much carbon would it build up, or would it get too warm for the vegetation to grow? And thereof, we drew our conclusions how effective biomass plantations could be under a given climate. And we see that although CO2 is a fertilizer for plants, really, so they're more productive under higher CO2 concentration up to a certain limit, but this is not enough to really balance the huge amounts of emissions that might still come ahead of us in the next decades, really.
Well, Lena, I can see that politicians would have an easier time selling the public on plants as the solutions instead of other geoengineering options like blotting out the sunlight by spraying aerosols high up. Do you think it's time with your paper to warn politicians and perhaps the public that there is no such easy way out, a one-stop solution like that?
Yes, that's true. So we really emphasize that there is no way around cutting down emissions now. So there's really no option. And yeah, also other climate engineering methods, one might say that they could postpone our action for a certain time, but there is no cure to the climate change problem, really, and it might run away. So yeah, we want to pressure that biomass plantations also can only be effective if the emissions are reduced simultaneously by huge amounts, so that the biosphere cannot balance so many so high emissions that we put out there right now or in the future. So it's really important to cut emissions now.
Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. My guest is the German scientist Dr. Lena R. Boysen. We're talking about whether planting millions of trees or other plants could help salvage the atmosphere from excess CO2, and that's the subject of an important new work of science published in the AGU journal called Earth's Future. Now, Lena, you have specialized in another subject which fascinates me and worries me, and that's the impact of dying forests. And we're told a wide band of the subtropics could suffer a repeated drought. Do you think climate change could bring mass die-offs of forests in some parts of the world?
So I just started with this topic, really, but we have seen in the last decades that there were major droughts in the U.S., in Canada, and they were mostly related to heat waves and long-lasting droughts. So researchers are still investigating how a tree really works, how water is pumped up through the roots, through the stem, to the leaves, and what way droughts might damage those trees. And they are almost certain that in future, if the climate change is really accelerating, or if we have more droughts in the future under higher temperatures and the frequency of droughts increases, then we might also have more or higher forest mortality. So trees are more susceptible to drought than if they additionally in higher temperatures. So yeah, it might be that certain regions will suffer from drought events in the future more than they did in the past because the trees are not adapted to this new climate. And then there's an additional factor of biotic attacks. So if forests and trees are suffering from droughts or heat waves,
well, the insects can get them. We've had that here in Canada. We had trees that were impacted by heat, and the Rocky Mountain pine forest beetle killed off millions and millions of pines because it didn't get cold enough in the winter to limit their growth. So we've already seen that in British Columbia.
Yeah, true. And I think Canada has huge, huge forests, and this impact really, it destroyed so many trees that Canada actually became a net source of carbon instead of a net sink of carbon. And we are right now investigating this because most climate models, or the vegetation part in climate models, they don't have this effect yet. So it's very complicated how trees work, how they react to droughts and heat stress. And yeah, we're trying to implement this now in the models to get it more realistic for future climate projection, yeah, and to get the carbon sinks and sources, right?
I think that's important to study because we've just talked about planting more trees or more vegetation of some kind to draw down the carbon, but at the very same time, warming may be killing off trees that might counterbalance that, so we don't make any progress. Certainly, there's new science needs to be done, I think.
Yeah, so it's very complicated. You have so many effects around the world. You have also like shifting tree lines because the northern latitudes are warming. So you have maybe temperate trees now moving northwards. So you might have new species in some areas. We are also investigating whether new species in different regions would be a better solution that are not so drought effective. So planting, I don't know, trees from the Mediterranean area further up north might be an option if these trees are better adapted to heat and drought stress, if that region is to be expecting more droughts in the future. So yeah, it's complicated. And again, the solution would be to stop emitting carbon to the atmosphere right now.
Yes, that's always the solution. Now, one of your co-authors on this new paper is a hero of mine, and that's Dr. Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber. How did he contribute?
So, yes, I wrote my PhD at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, and I gave some presentation on my topic, so biomass plantations. And he was always on my side, really saying, yeah, this is not a solution. We have to stress this, that there's no way around cutting emission because it's always harder to extract the carbon out of the atmosphere once it is released. And so I was very happy when he agreed to contribute to this paper. And furthermore, he's a really good writer, and he got the message across much better than I could have maybe. And it was also important to get this perspective from the biosphere modeler, really, because all these scenarios that use huge amount of biomass and biomass energy in their scenarios, these are integrated assessment models, so they have an economic component to them. And so biomass plantations are really cheaper than other options in mitigating climate change. And yeah, so we wanted to stress that, and it was really important to him also to get this message across.
But you're not saying don't use plants as part of a solution, don't plant trees. That isn't your message at all, is it?
No, it's not. So we say that, of course, you should plant trees. Of course, you should care about forests and stop deforestation, reforest areas. And you could also have biomass plantations, but at a much smaller scale. So it could complement mitigation actions, but only in well-selected areas. So you need to make sure that these areas are not needed for food production, that the amount of water that you would need to irrigate them probably is not is manageable, and that the effort is not too high, so that you don't have negative impact or trade-offs with other land users in that area. And one option would be to restore degraded soils, for example. So we have used and exploited agriculture soils in various world regions, and so these soils have become really unfertile. So using biomass plantations on these areas would really be a benefit to make these areas productive again. And there have been studies in China where this was successful. So yeah, this could be an option really to do that. And even on a small scale, if a farmer decides to have biomass plantations or we have biomass plantations on his fields to supply himself with some energy, then this might also be a good option. But it's not a good option to have that on a large scale. I mean, there are also monocultures, and this is never a good option.
I wanted to get your personal opinion on a couple of things. The IPCC is in between reports right now, and there are fewer climate marches, it seems to me. The news here in North America is completely fixated with political scandals. Do you think we are in a hiatus, a kind of quiet period of public attention to climate change?
Well, I don't think so. So I'm right in the middle of it right now. I'm contributing to the next climate report doing simulations with the Earth System model in Hamburg now. And we are discussing a lot, and I think in Germany we are also discussing a lot how it could go on and that we need cleaner energy. And I think in Germany last year and also this year already, we had so much energy from wind power and solar power. So this is really on its way, and people recognize it and people want to contribute. So I don't think that all the political scandals and wars in the world distract too much from this topic. I mean, of course they do, but there's still room for climate change discussions.
Well, it's refreshing to talk to you because right now climate science is in a dismal state in the United States as the government of the day tries to dismantle it. And, you know, I'm hopeful that in Europe and in China and other parts of the world, there's going to be even a new burst of research to take up what the United States may not be able to provide for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, we are in contact with the researchers in the U.S., of course. And, I mean, research is still going on. They're always welcome in our institute, I think. I mean, we are concerned about the U.K. as well, how it will go on there with the research. So we have EU projects that really have, that really depend on the U.K., so, I mean, it will take some years until this process is completed, but we try to have the science community together and to concentrate on work and to proceed with our work. I think that's important.
Yes. Now, please tell us about the conference that you were attending.
So I am right now, I'm not only working on the mortality of forests, but I'm also in a project called Crescendo, and it's a EU project. And its aim is to improve the Earth system models in Europe right now. So it's a European project. We have 7 Earth system models here. And this project has now been running for almost 2 years, not yet. And I'm involved in the terrestrial side of these Earth system models. So I'm at the MPI. We have this model there. And we try to improve the representation in the model of land use change, of forest structures, but also of permafrost and wetlands and nitrogen cycles. So, and we get together here. We have to discuss how far we got in the last 2 years. And we have this coupled model intercomparison project. And phase 6 is approaching soon. And these simulations will then go, or the analysis of the simulations will go into the next climate report. And so, yeah, we will discuss here in Brussels how the status is of the models, if everything is okay, if we can start simulation soon, and that we are on track. That's basically the idea of this workshop here.
As we finish up, is there anything else that you would like to say to our listeners?
Oh, yes. Keep being interested in land use change, in climate change, and keep an open eye on the forests of the world. Yeah, treat them well. Take care of them. They're important carbon extractors, and we need them. And adding more to the landscapes and changing even more than we did already is not a good solution.
The paper, The Limits to Global Warming Mitigation by Terrestrial Carbon Removal, was published in the AGU journal Earth's Future on May 17, 2017. That is an open access journal, so you can read both the plain language summary and the scientific paper itself. Find links to all that in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. We've been speaking with the lead author, Dr. Lena R. Boysen. She's with the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, with the Department of Geography at Humboldt University in Berlin, and the Max Planck Institute for Meteorology in Hamburg. Lena, thank you so much for sharing your valuable time with us.
Thank you, too. It's been a pleasure.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
I was a little surprised to hear that our German scientific guest, Lena Boysen, seemed not to worry about the Trump administration's efforts to close down government-funded climate science. Sure enough, a few hours later, from the conference, I got this email update from Lena, which she's permitted me to pass on to you. She writes, "I'm a boundless optimist, but optimism does not set things right, and I simply did not realize before attending a meeting in Brussels, now that the situation is already very critical. It was an eye-opener to hear that some scientists can't apply for grants anymore, and that we need to consider much tighter cooperation with our colleagues in the U.S. So yes, I personally believe that U.S. scientists will continue their research because it's way too important and valuable to lose it. But it will require tough decisions and tremendous efforts on the part of the global research community. That was a quote from Lena Boysen. As I said in the interview, I hope governments in other parts of the world will step into the leadership role in climate research that the United States held up to the 2016 election. We've had American climate scientists who assure me the universities will continue. Many of the top professors have tenure and cannot be fired, even by Trump. There are very progressive universities in the U.S. My main concern, however, is with NASA, which has been feeding the world invaluable data through the science satellites. The Twin Grace satellites have opened our eyes to changes in everything from the shrinking mass of ice on Greenland to depletion of groundwater under California. Some scientific satellites are aging, and now it looks like we could lose precious years before they can be replaced. The good news is that China has begun massive research into climate change and the atmosphere. More and more, I'm seeing experts from mainland China as the lead authors on important papers advancing what we know. China is also committed to developing alternative energy technology and deploying it on a massive scale. They've already started that. They're in the lead now on that, and this can only help us all. Germany we can count on, for now, as a continuing center of excellence in science of all kinds. But as Lena mentioned, with the move towards Trumpish nationalism in the UK, some science there may be threatened. Centers of their climate excellence, like the Tyndall Center and UK Met Office, are all government-funded. We need that to continue. If you're in the UK, please make sure you support that. Canadian climate science was set back 10 years, almost killed off, by the Conservative government of Stephen Harper. It takes part of a generation to rebuild something like that. Australian science has likewise suffered at the hands of the government there. Governments cutting off climate science when we need it most is strange and dangerous. It's like shutting down hospitals as the wounded arrive from a major accident or terrorist attack. I presume the drive to cut science is the result of suicidal greed by a few billionaires in the remaining fossil fuel empires, aided by a willing military-industrial complex and parts of the mining industry. Now it's up to the rest of us to stand up for science. We need to know a whole lot more, not a whole lot less. And we need to get what we know already way out there into the schools, into media, entertainment, and all walks of life. Nothing stands outside the requirement we all have for a stable climate that supports agriculture and all the species. We humans can fail at many things and carry on, but not this. Let's get the spoken word direct from the lead scientists of the world into a whole lot more ears. Thank you for listening again this week.